So our first speaker, Yuan Zhi, is Assistant Vice President, Director of Computational Genomics and Medicine at North Shore University Health System, Program of Computational Genomics and Medicine at the University of Chicago, Department of Public Health Sciences. Dr. Zhi's talk is about a big data computational approach to integrate TCGA data for genetic interactions in cancer.
Thank you for the invitation and introduction, and thanks for coming to the talk. I'm a new member, as you can see, so I'm still trying to navigate this huge meetings. I'm a statistician. Usually our meetings are much smaller and don't require upload of slides, so if you don't see my title in the program, it's because I didn't do my duties. I apologize for that. So I have about 25 minutes. Okay. So I want to talk about a big data application using statistical models to integrate TCGA data. I just want to first get a sense of, in the audience, how many of you have heard about TCGA before? One? Two? Okay. Great. So essentially, this is a sequence of a lot of works that we've been doing in the past several years. I'm just going to list the collaborators. A lot of them were my former colleagues at MD Anderson Cancer Center at Houston, Texas, when I was working for the cancer center then. And then in below, then these are the different flavors of the related work that we started out in inference for a single network or call it graph. And then we worked on two graphs or multiple graphs with potential differences in the topology. Since I came to Chicago in 2012, I got interested in big data and then just applied the method to lots of different graphs in TCGA. This is the website where you can find all the necessary tools and papers. So I'm going to go pretty fast on the statistical modeling part. I think the key here is to introduce this new tool to the community. The engine for this new tool is based on graphical models, and I'm a Bayesian statistician. So in my world, I usually integrate prior information with likelihood function and to get a posterior inference. So that's how I do statistics. So in this case, I want to integrate pathways and the prior information in the pathways. And I treat the pathway as a random quantity and then put a graphical prior model on the pathway and integrate with, let's say, observe the data, gene expression, for example. And then we construct a likelihood function for the data. And then as a return, we get a posterior knowledge on the same pathway that we wanted to inference on. So that's the basic philosophy, and this is under the Bayesian paradigm. So several nice things under this paradigm. First, we actually treat a graph or the pathway as a random quantity. So by that, I mean we actually allow topology of the graph to change. So consider a graph as, you know, having nodes and edges connecting the nodes. So we actually allow the edges to disappear or new edges to be added, and therefore changing the topology of the graph. And all the inferences are based on posterior probabilities, and there is a nice feature coming from these probabilistic-based inference, which is we can easily do false discovery control. I think the session was originally dedicated to the to John Story for the award, and he is a pioneer in working false discovery controls in the statistical field. And then we can incorporate all kinds of prior information using this framework. For example, you can get prior networks from CAG, Jingo, or maybe Ingenuity as a commercial package. So very quickly, the notion of this statistical framework involves these notations. I want to introduce them first. The only observed data is in a matrix format. Let's call it Y sub GT. So this could be a gene expression measurement for gene G in a biological sample T. And you measure each one of these genes in each sample. and you get a matrix. And the matrix is only observed among all these notations. All the rest of them are unknown parameters in the statistical models. E is a set of latent indicators. So our philosophy is that instead of directly modeling the dependence of the Y's, we want to model the dependence of the E's. The E's here are indicators. They're discrete. They essentially represent meaningful biological events. For example, if you're interested in gene expression, then EGT taking values minus 1, 0, 1 will represent a gene is under normal or over expressed in the system. So to biologists, the actual value of the Y is less meaningful than the actual event. They are more interested if the gene is up or down regulated instead of Y equals 10.5 or 10.8. So that's why we want to introduce these latent indicators to describe these important events. Then we introduce a G as a notation to represent the graph or the pathway, and then betas are the parameters describing the dependence strengths. So when the gene are associated, how strongly they are associated. And thetas are the parameters for the nuisance parameters for in the model, such as covariance or variance. Then writing down these notations, I can write down a very general Bayesian hierarchical model. There is seats up front. Okay. So the model involves a sampling model, which is the likelihood. If you're a frequentist statistician, this is all you need. You write down the likelihood, but perhaps not this one. So for this likelihood function, we actually assume conditional on E, the latent indicators. The measured observed data is independent of everything else other than these nuisance parameters. So you notice there's no graph here. So essentially we're saying when we know if the genes are up or down, then we should roughly know what Y is. But then we introduce the pathway or the dependence of these genes through this latent construction of the indicators. And this is a prior distribution. It defines the joint distribution of these indicators, and that dependence will describe the graph, and it's conditional on graph. Then we have a prior on the graph and a prior on the association strength, and then prior on all the other nuisance parameters. And you multiply all these components together, you get a Bayesian hierarchical model, and you can perform posterior inference. I'm going to go through very quickly. So in the next 5 minutes, I'm just going to tell you what each of these components are, and then I'll show you some inference results. So for the prior, on the graph, essentially it's not that hard. It looks pretty intimidating, but if you treat all possible graph as a space, then you can define probability measure on the space. A graph is essentially a pair of two sets, a set of nodes. When you write down a graph, you need to know which nodes are in the graph, and then a set of edges, meaning which pairs of nodes are connected. And once you know V and E, these two sets, then you can draw the graph. We allow two different types of construction, informative prior construction on the graph and vague prior. So when you have a pretty strong prior information on what the graph look like, for example, if you can get a protein network from CAG database, and you call that G0, then you can construct an informative prior. This is a geometric distribution. The tau here is a probability, and D is the distance between the random graph and the prior graph. So the larger the distance, the smaller this prior probability. So in other words, the more different that your graph looks from the original prior graph, the smaller prior probability it gets. So you don't want to step too far away from this G0, the prior graph. That's why this is called informative prior. It penalizes for departing away from G0. And vague prior essentially says my probability is proportional to a constant. I don't have any constraint on the prior network. And if you want to use this prior, then you have to be very careful about either having a small size graph, because the number of possible graphs explodes in the rate of super exponential. So you don't want to have too many nodes, or you can put some sparsity control. So this is the key statistical component. How do you define a joint distribution of these indicators? We want to define the dependence of gene between genes in terms of if they're up or down and conditional on the graphical structure. And turns out this has been solved in 1974 in statistical literature. This is the general format of writing down a joint distribution of indicators conditional on a graph. It can be written as this exponential of many facts of the indicators, two-way interactions, three-way interactions, and up, all the way up to the highest interaction term. So you can look at this exponential term, so you can look at this as a form of logistic regression. And these betas are indeed the coefficients for logistic regression. And then they have an interpretation of odds ratio. So you can use these betas to measure the association strengths between these different genes. So how do we put a constraint so that this is conditional on the graph, meaning conditional on which nodes are connected? The constraint here is that the coefficients of these betas for any higher order interactions has to be zero if and only if these nodes that are involved in the association do not form a clique. So what is a clique? It's essentially a set of nodes where all the pairs are connected. So on the right-hand side here, this graph is a clique because pairs of nodes are connected. On the left-hand side, it's not a clique because it's missing these two edges. So when you find a clique in the graph, then the corresponding betas for these four-way interactions cannot be zero. Otherwise, those betas have to be zero. So a simple question, what is a clique of size 2 with only two nodes? A clique of size 2 is an edge, right? So if the two nodes are connected, then that's a clique. So going back here, then you look at these two-way interaction terms, these beta ijs cannot be zero if I and j are connected. If they're not connected, then beta ij has to be zero. And that tells you how to construct the prior distribution for the betas. And that's essentially what we did. And for the likelihood function, essentially we want to define a distribution of the observed data conditional on a discrete random variable, taking values minus 1, 0, 1. And we know how to do that. That's called finite mixture models. So we can define these likelihood functions as finite mixture models. I won't go into the detail. So I'm just showing that with this finite mixture models, you can actually model a lot of different shapes of data. So the histogram here is actually a set of protein expressions from a ChIP-seq experiment. And then we show that using the mixture model, we can describe this histogram of the data. And then I'm going to skip the posterior computing part. So as I said, once you write down these models, then we essentially defined a coherent Bayesian hierarchical model. And how do you compute the model? It's based on Markov chain Monte Carlo. That's a pretty standard way nowadays to computing the parameters in the model. What you get at the end is a random sample of all the unknown parameters in the model, and you can use numerical approximations to do the inference. So for example, once we do the MCMC, then we can get the estimated posterior probability of including any edge in the graph, I and J. And that can be computed using the MCMC samples. And based on this posterior probability of including an edge, then you can rank them. You can rank these P hat IJs for all possible edges, and you can include only those edges with highest posterior probabilities. And you can use use FDR control to estimate the threshold. And also remember, betas are odds ratios in the logistical regression. So the sign of the beta actually tells you the association is positive or negative. And when you draw the graph, you can use different colors. So this is an first application we applied to ChIP-seq data set for a type of proteins called histone modifications. There are 17 of them in this picture. And these are the edges with highest posterior probability. And just by coincidence, that all of the edges are blue, meaning they are positively associated in the top graph. There's no red edge here. this is a very nice feature I like about the model, but I don't know if I have time to talk about it. So you can actually get a sense of variabilities of your graph. This is your point estimate, like posterior mode of your graph. But these four figures tell you the variance of the graph. So maybe let me spend 30 seconds on this. These numbers are percentages in terms of posterior probabilities. So 5.5 means 0.55. So this graph with only two edges received 0.55 posterior probability in the inference. It's the posterior mode. This graph has the highest posterior probability. And the second highest posterior probability is only 0.15. And the graph is different from the first one with one more edge here. And then third most frequent has a posterior probability of 0.13, and the fourth one has 0.12. And these two other graphs are also different from the top one. So you can treat this as a histogram of graphs. And this is your mode receiving the highest posterior probability. And your second, third, and fourth actually has much lower posterior probabilities, but these three have similar magnitude of posterior probabilities, right? If you apply this method to a different data set, these numbers will change, and that will tell you the variabilities of that inference. So this is one thing I really liked about this model. So because we use a model-based inference, we can easily extend the framework to infer differential networks. Suppose you have a cancer versus control. You want to see if the network changes between the two conditions, and that can be done using this framework. I skipped the detail, but this is the same data set we applied to those 17 proteins. We want to see if the network changes in promoter regions versus in insulator regions. We first get the point estimate under each region, but at the same time, we also get the differential networks. So these solid and dotted lines are the edges that are only present in one of the two conditions, but not in both. And these are also based on false discovery controls. We also extended to more than two graphs, but this is the fun part. We applied this model 200 million times. And the reason, I tell you the reason why, it's not because we just went nuts. There's a motivation for doing that. So 2 years ago, I wanted to attempt to address a problem. I want to understand the genetic interactions in cancer between different genomic features. So by features, I mean, let's say this is a picture of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 genes. But for each gene, you could talk about the copy number. This is copy number of the gene. You could talk about the expression of the mRNAs of the same gene. You could also talking about the methylation patterns of the gene. If you have data on all these three features, then you can talk about dependence of these features within the gene, as well as dependence across different genes. So when you talk about the interaction between two genes, you have to specify if it's a co-expression network, meaning the dependence between the gene expressions, or could be a co-methylation, or could be a co-deletion, and also across different features. So that's what I got interested about 2 years ago. And the reason I got interested is because there's this unprecedented TCGA data. Only two people in the room know about this. So this is a pilot project from NIH, cost about $1 billion. They studied about 25 different cancer types. The cool thing is they measured the whole genome features for these different features, copy numbers, the expression, methylation, protein for the same whole genome for the same set of samples. With that type of data, then we can use statistical models trying to address this problem of, you know, these interactions of these different features. So the first thing we did is we wrote a software called TCG Assembler to retrieve the data, and that turns out to be a very difficult task. So we did that, and essentially the task is to assemble and process these different feature data sets and put them together into a single table or matrix. So now after using this software, we can actually, for the same gene, put gene expression, protein expression, methylation copy number all together for the same gene across these columns of samples. And with this type of data sets, then we can apply our statistical inference. And the inference attempts to address a very simple question. So now we have, for each gene, we have these features, different features. Biologically, we know that these features are dependent. For example, if we know a copy number of a gene gets amplified, then in general, it would positively affect the gene expression of the same gene, the mRNA expression, right? Or if the gene gets methylated, in most cases, then the gene expression will be reduced, suppressed because of the methylation. So we already know some biological prior knowledge of the features in the same gene, but also we are interested in interactions between two genes. Let's say gene A is a transcription factor of gene B, then there should be some interactions between the protein expression or maybe gene expression of gene A to expression of gene B. And then it, since we have whole genome TCGA data, we can do a whole genome scan to look for all these pairs of genetic interactions. There are 20,000 genes. Unfortunately, there are 200 million pairs of genes. And that's where the number comes from. So we apply the so you treat this as a graph, and we apply the model I just described to all possible pairs of genes. And there are 200 million of them. We optimize the program for each gene pair, which now takes about 47 seconds. That's pretty fast, but when you apply this to 200 million times, that comes up to 2.5 million CPU hours, meaning if you have one computer, you need to run 2.5 million hours. I don't think I can live that long. So I looked around. Fortunately, there's a supercomputer here at University of Chicago called Beagle. It's a very powerful machine with more than 17,000 computers connected. Now it's almost 50,000. So I ran this analysis on Beagle. It took about a month to complete because there are other people running the jobs too. But it took us a year to prepare the jobs before we launched the run. At the end, we got now almost 1 terabyte of analysis results. So I'm guilty of my own action. I produced a relatively large data as results. So I can't hand you a hard drive of 1 terabyte and say, here is my inference. It's useless. So what we did, we actually did a lot of informatics work. We put all the results into a database in the backend, and then we build a Apache web server and a front end so that people now can go to a website I'm going to show you in a second and live query all these results. And in the paper, we show that there are actually some very interesting findings that I won't have time to talk about. This is essentially when you talk about interactions within this gene in terms of copy number methylation and gene expression, these two different types of graphs actually can be distinguished using analysis results. We also did some validation by comparing our posterior network with CAC pathway. So this is the interface. The program is called Zodiac. The interface is extremely simple. It's a search bar. It's like Google. And you type in gene names. And if you type one, two, or multiple genes names, it will return different results. Some pictures are nice, some are not so, but hopefully they are useful. And so this is the website. If you don't remember anything, just try to remember this website. How much time do I have? A few moments. Okay. So I'm actually gonna go there if I have internet. I don't. Okay, too bad. So if you have internet, just go to this website. It's compgenome.org/zodiac. Or if you Google Zodiac, other than returning the Zodiac killers, hopefully you'll find this one too. And then I started writing some blogs about the database myself because there are just so many results. There are 1 terabyte of results. I don't know if most of them are junk or they're useful. So I treat myself as a user of Zodiac. And I'm apparently biased, but I would say this is a great tool. So we're working on Zodiac 2. That's the last slide. There are a lot of things we didn't do. So for example, in this picture, we didn't include important things like SNPs or mutations. We also wanted to incorporate microRNAs because all of them are available in TCGA. Another thing is analysis was done as a pan-cancer fashion. So we pulled samples across 11 different types of cancer, but we want to do cancer tissue-specific analysis in TCGA. As you can see, for each tissue, we're going to need at least 2.5 million CPU hours to back it up, and that's the limiting factor. But now that we know how to do it, hopefully we'll get support from Beagle, allowing us to run these again and again and put cancer-specific queries out there. So I'm going to stop here. And, thank you.